3.
For those who want to dig deep and grow strong, this is the Vintage Truth Podcast with best-selling author and teacher, Jeff Kinley. It's time to power up your faith and take your walk to the next level. Now, here's Jeff with today's podcast.
Okay, well, we kind of skipped a day, and the reason why is because I was in San Diego speaking at a prophecy conference there with my good buddy Don Perkins, and my wife and I were able to make the trip out there together, so that was a lot of fun. But it was just an incredible series of meetings, and oh my gosh, just the spirit that was there. I mean, God is really waking up many people in His bride, and it's evident because of their hunger for truth. And that's the thing to me that's just so exciting, because as you travel around and you see, you know, churches that just have no interest in understanding what's happening in the world, and then you find a group of believers that really want it, man. They really want to be fed. And as a speaker, you know, I'm always reading the audience. I know whether or not they're into it or not. And man, they were into it. And so it was just a great time, a wonderful time. Glad to be back. But hey, I launch out tomorrow for Georgia, and very excited to be with a great pastor friend there, and looking forward to just getting to know him a lot better. But I'm telling you, he wants his people to understand what's happening. And so I'll be there at North Hall Church in Gainesville, Georgia this coming weekend. But anyway, and then I have a week off and then back on it again. I forgot where I'm going, but somewhere. Anyway, it's going to be great. Hey, listen, do me a favor. Take your phone. You may be listening to this on your phone right now, but I want you to just maybe press pause for a second. Take your phone and download the Vintage Truth app. This thing is going to is getting ready to explode. I'm meeting with the tech support here for my my app, and I'm starting to really download a whole lot more videos, and so I'm going to be doing that for you. But download that app. You can watch this podcast. Obviously, if you're watching it now, you are. But there's also a little button there that just says audio only, so you don't have to have the video playing in the background. And if you want to save yourself from having to look at my face for 20 minutes, then you can just put it on audio and just listen to it that way. So, but download that app and please tell others about it as well. We're trying to really just roll out this app and get as many people on board as possible. This app won't be canceled. No matter if anybody else, if I get all kicked off Apple or whatever, this will go on. So anyway, do that. This is available at your app store. Now, we're in the thick of this series on courageous faith. And by the way, one more thing, I ask you to pray, because next week I'm launching here locally a local Bible study for anybody who wants to come, and it's called the Vintage Truth Bible Study. And you can go to my official Facebook page, Jeff Kinley Author and Author Speaker, I think it is, Jeff Kinley Author Speaker, on Facebook and get more information. But I put a little digital flyer on there about this Bible study. I'm so pumped about it. We're just going to start it, see what happens, and see who comes. And if enough people want to come and have interest in it, I'm going to study through the book of Jude, first of all. It's going to be on Wednesday nights from like 7 to 8:15. It's very, very simple, very scaled back. You just show up with the Bible. And if you want to bring a little notebook or something, you can do that too. And a lot of people are asking me, Jeff, are you going to record these? These are going to be available for video, for audio. I am working feverishly to do everything I can to get those things recorded for you. So, and again, I'll put those up on the app as well. So if you want to study through the book of Jude with me, then get the app. All right. All right, cool. Okay. So courageous faith. And we talked about Joshua last time. We're going to fast forward a bit. I'm going to kind of jump over Daniel for a second, because I want to get to these three Hebrew teenage guys named Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And just a fascinating story. And then we'll go back to Daniel after we finish this one. But here's the deal. So 605 BC, which I know you're really interested in, but 605 BC, Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar came in and he conquered Jerusalem. He took captives of the Jews to Babylon. Now, part of what precipitated this was that Jeremiah the prophet had told King Jehoiakim, don't make alliances with pagan nations. And he did anyway with Egypt. And God came in and basically just said, all right, you know, this is it. We're gonna take you away. So this captivity is partially a discipline, a judgment from God. Because when a nation goes astray, then especially this nation that God had a special covenant relationship with and still does, but when this nation goes astray, God told him, I'm going to punish you. You know, I'm going to let you be subject. That's the whole book of Judges was about that, you know? And so they did that. Now, on a general scale, you know, people a lot of times will quote 2 Chronicles 7:14, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and seek my face, I will forgive their sin, I will heal their land, blah, blah, blah. That has nothing whatsoever to do with America, okay? And I do a deep dive into that passage there in my book, The End of America, ? But the whole idea is that this was for Israel. God had he's talking to Israel there. We are not his people as Americans. And so God has no specific promises to us on that regard. But I also talk about in that book, End of America, that God does have certain expectations that he has of pagan nations. And he tells them that, you know, righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. And so God does have standards. He has, you know, basic moral standards. He expects expects Gentile nations to abide by, just basic civilized, you know, laws and rules and things like that. Of course, we've broken every single one of them in our country, and some of them we've even taken off the books, okay? But so God's relationship with us is different. Really, if you want to read about kind of how a nation is judged by God other than Israel, then just read Romans chapter 1, verses 18 through 32, and that'll give you a pretty good idea. All right, so Israel is taken away into captivity, and among the young men that are taken there are Daniel and three of his friends. Now, his friends had different names. You know them by Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, but that wasn't their original Hebrew names, okay? The original Hebrew names were Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And they changed their names to reflect their Babylonian counterparts, the Babylonian gods. And their names got changed to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And all of their names have very spiritual meanings. And then when they were changed over to Babylonian, then they also had spiritual meanings, but for another god. For example, Daniel means God is judge. Belshazzar, which was Daniel's new name, means may Bel protect his life. Hananiah means Yahweh is gracious. Shadrach means command of Aku, which was the moon god. And then Mishael means who is what God is, which is pretty cool. But Meshach means who is what Aku is. So they're directly mocking the Jewish God by doing this. And then Abednego means servant of Nebo. So in each case, their name contains the name of the true God, but they changed it to an equivalent for the heathen God, okay? So Daniel and his three friends are taken captive, and one of the first things that happens is that they are asked to change their diet and begin to eat Babylonian food. Now, this is not a big deal for us as Christians today because, you know, we are allowed to eat anything we want to. God says in Acts chapter 11, we can eat all kinds of meat and all these stuff. Nothing is prohibited. Sometimes people try to say, oh, if you go, you need to do the Old Testament diet, you know, whatever. And it's the original diet God wants you to have. Well, originally, Adam and Eve, just parenthetically, were vegetarians because there was no death. And if there's no death, you're not eating meat, right? So originally they were vegetarians, but God says you can eat meat now. It's okay. But sometimes people say, oh, you can't eat shrimp. You can't eat shellfish, all this stuff. You know, they call it the maker's diet or something like that. But we are free to eat whatever we want, obviously within reason. But anyway, so all that to say is they wanted them to to eat foods that were prohibited by their Jewish law. So what are you going to do, right? So here's what happened. So Daniel, it says in chapter 1, verse 8, because Daniel's lumped in with these guys here, says Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine which he drank. So he sought permission from the commander of the officers that he might not defile himself. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did the same thing. And so they brought a proposition to him, okay? They just said, all right, why don't you do this? Why don't you let us eat our diet and you let the rest of the people want to eat their diet. And at the end of a certain amount of time, let's just see who's better. Let's see who looks better. Let's see who performs better. And then deal with us according to what you see. Now, that's really a step of faith. Because what they're doing is they're saying, just let us obey our God and pursue excellence and that type of thing. And let's just see whose job performance is better. And they're like, all right, we'll go for that. So they do that. And it says at the end of 10 days, it says in verse 15, their appearance seemed better and they were fatter. That means, you know, just more well fed. They were fatter than all the youths who had been eating the king's choice food. So the overseer continued to withhold the choice food, the king's food, and the wine, and they kept giving them the vegetables they were allowed to drink or allowed to eat. Now, then it says in verse 17, and as for these four youths, God gave them knowledge, look at this, knowledge and intelligence in every branch of literature and wisdom. And Daniel even understood all kinds of visions and dreams. Now, I just want to say something about that for a second. You know, sometimes we think that, you know, God's way and obeying God in all areas is kind of the inferior way. God's way in dating, God's way in marriage, God's way in relationships, God's way in business, God's way in ethics. It's just kind of like substandard because, you know, you're not cutting corners. You're not trying to, you know, cheat people. You're not doing it the world's way. You know, you're not cutthroating your way to the top. You're not stepping on the little people or whatever. But really, God's way is the best way. God's work ethic is the best way. What God tells us to do is always the best. And it was the best for these guys. And guess what? It ended up proving to be the best. And the people out there saw it. You know, the non-Christians saw that, yeah, these guys are actually better than our guys. And just because they're following God. And that's one of the things that we pray, you know, is that people will see our lives and see that, you know what, you really do have a quality about your life. And it's not just in your work ethic. I mean, you should be, as a Christian, the greatest worker at your job, if you have a job, or if you, you know, work somewhere or whatever. You should achieve, aspire rather, to achieve the highest standard that you possibly can in whatever you do. You should be the best at what you do. You really should. Not so that people will look at you and praise you, but so that people will look at your God and go, wow, God really did do something. You know, I was relating a story the other day, I'll tell this real quick, of a buddy that I had not seen since high school. He was on my basketball team. And this was fast forward like 30 years, okay? And I'm in my hometown over Christmas and I run into him and we start talking. And he was just talking about, you know, what a great athletic team we had. He was complimenting me and all this stuff, you know. And then he said to me, he said, but something happened to you. What happened to you? And I said, well, Derek, Jesus happened to me. And he said, you know what? I can see that. And then he said, I can still see it in your eyes, that your life has a quality. Now, catch me at the wrong moment and you're not going to see that, okay? So I'm just glad, you know, it was a good moment, right? Because I'm not always reflecting Christ like I should, okay? But the point is that, you know, people should see in the quality of what we do, even if it's our own, just the way we treat our children in public or our wives or, you know, the way we drive. That's tough, isn't it? But you know what? People should see that we honor Christ and they should point that out. They should be able to see that. And that's why, you know, that's why in Peter, he writes about, you know, be ready to give an answer to those who ask you about the hope that is within you. You know, people are going to ask sometimes, what makes you so different? I've had people ask me that about my family when we were raising our kids. Why is your family so unique, so different? Why the quality of the young men you're raising are just outstanding. Why? And it wasn't anything to do with me, really, in spite of me, in spite of us. It was because of godly principles that we were trying to instill in our kids. And guess what? It took. And all three of them today, and their wives, and their children, are all following that. Why? Because God's way is the best way. Well, they knew that. And so they ended up, it says, and for every matter of wisdom and understanding, verse 20, which the king consulted them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and conjurers who were there in the realm. You know, that's a great point. 10 times better. Wouldn't it be great just to make a goal to be 10 times better? I mean, when I write a book, you know, people ask me, what is your process in writing books? I obsess over my writing. And the reason I do that is because I work very hard with every word in my books. And if I have a 55, 60,000 word book, every single word is specifically chosen. And I'll obsess over that. And I'll scratch out words and find a better word because I want you, when you read it, to say, I get it. I get it. Yes, that's it. You know, I identify with that. I want to be 10 times better than other writers. Not for Jeff Kinley, not to win awards, but so that you can be encouraged and equipped and built up and empowered and so that God can be glorified. And that's exactly what these guys did. So now we fast forward just a little bit more here, and we get to a time in chapter 3 where Nebuchadnezzar has now made this giant statue of himself. Ego much, right? And in chapter 3, King Nebuchadnezzar makes this image of gold. Now, listen to what it says here. And I'm really looking forward to pursuing this whole thing with you. So don't worry. We're gonna have another episode on this, at least. It says, Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, the height of which was 60 cubits and the width 6 cubits. And he set it on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Basically, it was a 90-foot tall statue. 90 feet tall, about 9 or 10 feet wide. Okay, huge, right? Then he sent word to assemble all the members of the government, the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, the rulers of the provinces, to come to the dedication of the image, all right? And again, you know, people who have great egos want images of themselves, and there's going to be another guy coming called the Antichrist, and his false prophet is also going to make an image of him as well. And then it says, they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And then he made this decree. Now, this is a governmental decree. It's a law. It's an edict. And you cannot disobey. It's like when you're in the airport right now, and you see all these big signs, and you hear all these announcements, then you get to your gate, you hear the announcement. Federal law. They always say, federal law dictates that you must wear a mask over your mouth and over your nose. If you're going to fly, failure to comply will result in being taken off the plane, taken out of the airport, and perhaps banned from air travel. And they have said this for forever. Okay. Flying back from San Diego, I did that. I wear a mask on a plane, right? It's okay. That's what we need to do to fly. I can wear a mask. Want to take a nap? I take my mask. I pull it up over my eyes as well so I can sleep. All right, here we go. So he says, at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the lyre, the trigon, which in the King James says sackbut, which is a weird instrument. I have no idea what that is. The psaltery, the bagpipe, all kinds of music. He says, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Fall down. Worship the image. Now, this is exactly what's coming. And we're in the process of ramping up to that right now. The more people say to you, first they suggest it, then they recommend it, then they say you must do it, and then they say if you don't do it, we're going to severely penalize you. That is what a man-centered, demonically inspired government does with unjust laws and rules. And we're going to talk more about that next time, because Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had a decision to make. Are they going to be a crowd pleaser? Are they going to be a Nebuchadnezzar pleaser? Or are they going to be God pleasers? And I want to give you 10 reasons why they could have compromised next time on the Vintage Truth Podcast. Don't miss it. It's going to be good.
Thanks for listening to the Vintage Truth Podcast. Please subscribe and share with a friend. For more about Jeff's ministry, go to jeffkinley.com.